Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This week, on a special bonus episode of Meatin' 3, we find out how Brexit could be changing the way that Brits eat.
If you're not getting your food from the European Union, where Britain gets 30% directly, well, where are you going to get it from? As I put very succinctly, bye-bye fresh peaches from Italy, hello tinned peaches from Florida. Bye-bye fresh oranges, hello tinned oranges. Bye-bye free-range beef, hello hormone-injected beef.
Tune in to hear about the UK's struggle to stabilize its food system on Meatin' 3, HRN's weekly food news roundup, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are so excited to be sitting down with one of our favorite chefs from the Midwest, Yi Vang. He's returning to Snacky Tunes to talk about his first Kickstarter for his first pop-up, Vinai. You may remember him, he was a previous guest, and we talked about the Union Hmong Kitchen, serving up classic Hmong food and telling the story of their people, their places, and the delicious food they serve. We're doing a few more remote interviews this season, so we can tell some more stories outside of LA and New York and Brooklyn, and this is the first one. Please, 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 please go to Kickstarter, search Yi Vang, search Vinai, that's V-I-N-A-I, and support to the Kickstarter, which is live now. Then we are going deep. I'm talking deep. I'm talking episode 4 into the archives to play one of our favorite bands from some of our favorite people, Tijuana. We got Connie Baby, Wayne Baby, and Chrissy Pooh. Here we go. Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky Tunes.
We'll be right back.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one of your hosts, Darren Bresnitz. We are so excited to be welcoming back to the show Yia Vang, chef and owner of Union Mung Kitchen and future chef owner of V9. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes.
Thanks a lot, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so first off the bat, let the people know there is a Kickstarter up and running to help get V9, the new brick and mortar version of your restaurant, off the ground. It's running right now. It's live on Kickstarter.
Yes. So we started out and, it's pretty exciting. Had our launch and everything. And so ready to rock with them. Yeah.
Awesome. So I want to go back a little bit and, talk about 2019 and leading up to that, because it was a pretty big year for you. Being named 2019 Chef of the Year by Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine. How did it feel to go from doing pop-ups to this accolade to being, just an established part of the Twin City culinary scene?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I feel very honored, even for that award. I didn't know that it was happening until the day, I think they printed the magazine, and until the day they kept it pretty close to the vest. And the reason why they got how they got the photos and everything for that was they actually just shot us the email and said, hey, we kind of like to do some photos for an article. They didn't tell me what it was for or anything. And they came over and we did some photos and stuff like that. And I didn't even know about it until the food editor sent me a text and she's like, hey, by the way, did you see this? And she's like, this just fell on my desk. And so I was kind of shocked, real honored. Like last year's Chef of the Year was Jamie Malone, and she's James Beard finalist.
Shout out to Jamie, Grand Cafe, big fans of her.
Yeah. So again, like I said, it's really cool to be like, whoa, crap, like that's Jamie Malone, and then wow, us. And we always joke and say, we're like, some of these chefs that have one have two, three restaurants, and we kind of have half of a restaurant. So we always have a good laugh about that.
I mean, I wouldn't, not to besmirch it as a half a restaurant, but it's been an extremely successful pop-up, the Union Mung Kitchen. And, it's been around for 4 years, and you've been able to keep putting up food. That's pretty successful.
Yeah, I think, it's funny because, we always feel that, like, we call it a restaurant. And right now, we're in residency. We have a residency at a brewery, Sociable Cider Works, where, they bought out this really big food trailer. And we're actually, about a year now, we've been just working there 6 days a week. We've been doing this residency there. But it's funny because when people call or they ask or they message or email us, they're always asking, oh, hey, when are you getting a real restaurant? When are you starting a real restaurant? So right. We get a lot of that. And that's, we joke and always say, I feel like Pinocchio, like we're not a real boy yet, one day. So yeah, definitely. We feel pretty good at what we're doing, but this next step we're taking, it's just releasing the name, announcing, we actually, no joke, last week we've gotten calls already for people who want reservations for the restaurant. And I don't know, I part of me goes, I don't think you guys understand how a restaurant works. Like, we announced it, but we still got to build this thing.
Yeah.
So we've had, we've had people call and said, oh, hey, by the way, can we get reservations for V9 next week? And I'm like, you didn't read the whole article, did you? Part of me wanted to do that and say that, but,
No. So when did you start thinking about having a brick and mortar? Because obviously it wasn't just people saying like, oh, you don't have a real restaurant. Because to take on the weight of having your own place and the responsibility is not just enough for people just being detractors. So what made you change? When did you start thinking about it? How long's the road been?
Yeah, so the brick and mortar has always been
I actually have been deterred many times away from brick and mortar, from other friends who own restaurants, where they're like, you know, you kind of have the good with what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's really funny. So people have always said, hey, you know, this is probably, you know, you should just stick to, you know, doing pop-ups and stuff, which I tell them, like, great, I get what you're saying, but man, pop-up, it's so limited to what we can really do. And I think to really show the kind of food that we can really want to put out. So again, said brick and mortar has always been kind of the idea, you know, the idea about everything, you know, has always been brick and mortar. The only problem that we had was, I felt kind of alone. Like at that point, it was just me and my cousin, Chris. We were kind of been running these pop-ups, and then we would take on like these, I call them mercenary cooks that would come in once in a while to help us. So you felt alone, but in the last year and a half, we've also been able to develop a team. Now, like a very important person is Dave, who's my business partner. Like he really, he brings in the business aspect. He's a lawyer by trade, but he has this really critical eye for everything. So Dave and I, you know, we were friends. We met through, you know, a few years back. And then just again, like I said, he's a lawyer. So I would get these LOIs or these lease agreements from, because, you know, up here in the Twin Cities, I don't know if you know, but, you know, sometimes the Twin Cities are always a few years behind other bigger cities. But food halls are starting to grow. I think we have like 3 or 4 food halls in the last sure. year here, you know? And so these people will send in these lease agreements to me and be like, hey, like, I, you know, we would love you to consider, we really want you to think about, you know, putting your spot into our food hall. Well, it felt cool. Like, again, like felt like the girl being asked to the prom, and I felt cool. I did. I was like, oh, they like me. They want to be my friend. And, you know, so I get these lease agreements. At the end of the day, Darren, as you know, I'm a cook, right? So yeah. Lease agreements, not my thing. So Dave was, this actually was about a year and a half, you know, almost 2 years ago. Dave was like my lawyer friend who I would just take these lease agreements to. And I'm like, hey, does this look cool? Like, should I sign this? And then he'd read them. I'm like, no, don't sign this. And then after 2 or 3 of these, he's like, I got an idea. How about anytime somebody wants you to sign something, you just bring it to me. Like, yeah. I'll, you know, and then we kind of just started dreaming together. I'm like, man, what would it look like if we just did our own thing? You know, and yeah, and then from there on, it was just like finding all these parts. You know, we were very blessed to have all these incredible, talented people that would say, you know, even like the marketing group and the PR group that's been helping us put together this Kickstarter. You know, Mary, she was like, hey, I don't ever want to do a Kickstarter because they're so hard to do. They take a lot of time. But she said, but she came to us about 2 years ago. She said, but if you were going to do a Kickstarter, I would do yours. You know, like I would come out of retirement for this. And so, again, just very talented people who know what they do really well. And they just gather around us. And that's kind of how I don't think I would be able to be where I am without all these different people, all these different components coming in. So, yeah, that answer your question. But
it does. And it's amazing to have such a support group around you. Especially when opening up a new spot, especially when you have notoriety on it and knowing that there are some things that you probably want to avoid, what is, mm-hmm. in your mind, the ideal way you would open your restaurant?
Oh, the ideal way would be finding funding fast. I think that's everything. I'm a realist. Like, I understand that there is, you know, like, you have to have heart, you have to have soul, you have to have drive, and all of that is great, and I believe in that, but funding is your friend.
Sure.
You know, so if we could get the funding fast, you know, not run into any construction or building issues, you know, like, for us, just even, like, going through the interviews with different architects and different builders, you know, looking through design and all that stuff. You know, the one thing I tell people is like opening a restaurant like, it's just not about, hey, let's put out some great food. I mean, like, pop-ups are, that's what pop-ups are for. Like, we just put out some food, we'll figure out the rest. Restaurant is like, it's like, I've learned to wear like 8 different hats. Like, seriously, on our first day of branding concept, and this isn't me, and anybody who knows me will laugh when they hear this, but on the first day, it was like 2 hours of looking at mood boards and Pinterest pictures. Like, that's not my jam, you know? Like, I was just like, I don't care, like, you know? But all of that is very important. All of that stuff, it's all important, you know? So, again, you know, if I had my way doing this, and hoping that this would go right, it would literally be just, you know, like getting that funding fast, having all that stuff figured out, and then kind of just and hoping that there's no, you know, stoppage when it comes to construction, when it comes to building, when it comes to architects, when it comes to all of that stuff, you know, because all that stuff, like, the longer that stuff holds up, the longer the project actually takes, and, you know, so.
Of course. So you mentioned that there is a difference between what you could do with pop-ups and what you could do with a permanent location. What are you looking forward to doing with a brick and mortar, with the food, community building? What dreams do you have in having, you know, your own clubhouse?
Yeah, I mean, the sky's the limit, you know. I've always told the guys, just because right now we cook out of a 34-foot food trailer, and working outside in the snow, we have this 10 by 10 tent where we have this wood fire grill that we got, and then the smoker that we're working under this tent. And every day, if it snows, like right, like today, or like yesterday, we just got a bunch of snow and ice, and everything's frozen, and we're half frozen outside cooking out of a fire. Like, just because we have this trailer and this tent that we're cooking out of doesn't excuse the quality of food that we put out, you know, because my father taught us that just because we came to this country as refugees and immigrants, that doesn't give us an excuse to say, oh, we started, you know, so behind, you know. And that was just this thing I learned from him, watching him. Like, he never complained. The fact that he didn't speak English, but he went out there and he still hustled and he worked, you know, the fact that he didn't have a, you know, quote unquote education, like, he still went out there every day, and he didn't have an excuse, kind of like, oh, woe is me, I can't do this because of this or because of that. And so that was one thing that I really wanted to instill to the boys when we, you know, when we put together this trailer. And then the other thing too, is this actually excites us. Like, even like, the trailer's leaky half the time, so there's always water coming into the trailer. You know, the trailer's always cold in the winter. Like, last year, I walked into the trailer and the two fryers were frozen. That meant the oil was just one complete block of like frozen oil. It looked like a big chunk of butter that was in there, you know. And it was just like, I wanted to give up. I'd be like, no, I don't want to do this anymore, I'm just tired, you know. But knowing that we'll have our own place, like, it kind of gives us this like symbol of hope, like of what's to come, of greater things to come. And what, in an ironic and very entertaining way, Veni, the name Veni, Veni is the name of the refugee camp that I was born in Thailand, and the refugee camp that my parents met in 78, and they were married. They were there, we were all there until 88, and then we came to America. And you know, actually I was being interviewed, and somebody said, when the refugee camp be kind of like a sad place to name your place after? Well, for us, Veni was, or for the Hmong people, for the refugees, Veni was a place of hope. It was faith, a sanctuary. It was a place of refuge. You know, it's this better hope to come. If we can get there, the mentality was, if we can get there, then from there on, everything looks better. And I think that, in a kind of funny, ironic way, that's how we think about the brick and mortar. Like, all this stuff is hard work, but it works us towards that brick and mortar. And so, you know, it's, that name to our people rings true. That name to our team rings true. You know, that idea that, you know, this is coming, like, greater things are yet to come here. Yeah, so we kind of, that's where our hope is. We're putting kind of our hope in that.
That's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. We're going to take a quick music break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Kickstarter for Veni. We're going to talk about the food that you're going to do. And we're going to talk about your own cooking show, Relish, on the Twin Cities PBS. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. Hello, welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are chatting with Yia Vang, who is the chef and owner of Union Hmong Kitchen and the proud runner of a Kickstarter for his new permanent brick and mortar for Vinai. And there's a lot of inspiration of your own past, your own present, and possibly your future, the hopeful future that you have that you're putting into this restaurant. So I'd love for you to talk to it a little bit about the food and your approach to running this restaurant and what you want to cook and how it's going to tell the story of yourself, but also the Hmong people in general.
Yeah. So the way that we're setting up the menu. Like I said, the Hmong food has four elements. It has, you have rice, a protein, a vegetable, or some kind of broth. And then the last thing is the hot sauce. So the way that we're going to set up the menu is going to reflect all of that. You know, it's going to have every, you know, all that element in it. The thing is, I've been, you know, thinking about the way that we want to do this food. I don't want it. There's a line that my father used to say to us when we were kids and we get in fights and we'd be like, no, this is mine. This is mine. My dad would always say, when you say this is mine, you actually have less. But when you say this is ours, you have more. And we were kids, so we're like, whatever, you know. But as I've grown older, I realized that. Because when I think that a lot of dining, there's that idea of like, oh, like what's on my plate? Or I want my plate to look like this, you know. And you're really saying this is mine. And then if I'm going to share it to you, you have to ask my permission for me to share this with you. So in Hmong food, you never do that. In Hmong food, it's always been, this is ours. everything's in the middle of the table. Whatever's in the table, it's ours, not just mine or you know, it's ours. And so I really want to get away from using like words like communal table or family style. And you know, a lot of times people use that to talk about Hmong food or even the kind of food we make. It's the, oh yeah, it's a communal kind of food or it's a family style. Like for me growing up, it wasn't communal. It wasn't family style. It was just dinner. It was food.
Right.
You know? So eating and eating together was, when you eat, you always ate together. And regardless of how much you had, when you put that in the middle of the table, it was everybody's. So it didn't matter how many pieces whoever got. It was just, that was all ours. And so the menu is going to reflect that. So we, you know, like the proteins are bigger proteins that serve 2 to 4 people. You know, the quote unquote smaller plates are going to be these vegetable size plates, you know, and then you will have rice. And you'll have different kinds of rice you can choose from. And then we'll have different kinds of hot sauce that you can choose from. So that's the main chunk of the menu. And you know, obviously we'll have so little kind of individual size stuff. But mostly we will really, you kind of like build your own dinner type, you know, like the way that the dinner goes, the way that your dinner goes is what you can build it the way you want, you know? And we encourage people to just like, hey, like bring 2 to 3 people with you, like when you eat, you know, or come together as a group, instead of us always having to say, I always thought it was funny when people always say, oh, this section, these are shareable plates. I'm like, wait, so I can't share any of the other stuff? Only this stuff I can share? You know, and so we always joke and say, everything's shareable. Like, that's just a given here.
You know? I love that.
The food is a reflection of my mother and my father.
Right.
A lot of the food there is kind of from what they have taught me. And even today at Union Hmong Kitchen, all the food there has their element, has their touch on it. And I've just said that this whole restaurant is an echo of their legacy. Everything about who they are, everything my father given, my father sacrificed a lot, gave up a lot, you know, to get us to this country. Everything on this dinner table, people are going to realize that. They're going to see that. They're going to be part of that, you know. You know, we really have really pushed hard to make sure that we can tell their story correctly and honor them. You know, my mom and, like, for example, we have what's called Mama Bang's hot sauce. My mom and dad, they make this hot sauce for us every year, 75 gallons they make for us. And then we kind of just, you know, yeah, so it's just part of the food. And it's become pretty popular here in the Twin Cities, so a lot of chefs always talk about, like, hey, dude, let me get some of that Mama Bangs over here, you know? So it's funny. So we couldn't think of a cool, sexy name for it, so we just called it Mama Bangs Hot Sauce. So, yeah.
I love it. You know, with your parents passing on so much to you, you know, your father's cooking skills, your mother, her cooking skills, and the hospitality, what do you hope to teach and to pass down to chefs who come to your kitchen, both who are of Hmong descent and people who are of non-Hmong descent?
Yeah, I think, like, to my Hmong brothers and sisters who are wanting to, you know, kind of get into the food world, you know, like, food is so much part of our culture and who we are as Hmong people. Like, and that's what makes us Hmong is our food, because, you know, when you have a group of people who don't have a country of their own, or they don't have a land of their own, they hold on to what they can carry, and for a lot of them, it was their food. So food is such an integral part of who we are. It's a great part of our culture and how we speak about ourselves. So to all the Hmong kids who want to be, you know, chefs and cooks, you know, like I've said before to some people, I said, you know, we are an echo of the past, but we get to write our own future. And with that, what I really mean is, our parents and our grandparents didn't get to write their future, because war literally came into their front lawn, you know, like war came and they had to survive. And a lot of them survived. A lot of them died. A lot of them gave up everything, you know, and now we are the generation where the first time as Hmong kids, you know, as Hmong son, or grandson, I get to write my future. Like, in our history, we have never had this. For our people, we get to write our future here in America. Where you said, hey, where we have Hmong people who said, hey, I want to go into law and I want to be a judge. You know, last year, the first Hmong judge was appointed. You know, it's like, you know, where people are like, hey, we want to go and we want to start our own business, you know. And then we got Hmong CEOs and CFOs that are running business, you know. Like, that never happened in our history before. And so to me, I wanted to say to them, like, we get to write our future because, you know, because of the ones of from the past who have sacrificed everything. So we write our future in remembrance of them. And that's kind of what, you know, I want to do with this restaurant.
To use inspiration, yeah. Right? For maybe younger Hmong chefs who be like, wow, like, these guys did it. I can do it, and I can make the food that I grew up with and share it out in the world. And maybe it's a little different than what you do. Maybe it's a twist. Maybe it's like Hmong meets Vietnamese street food, or maybe it's Hmong meets, you know, Native American food. But you're giving them that roadmap that this is a viable path of success and to believe in what they grew up with.
Definitely. You know, like, I was the kid growing up. I mean, I know that there are many, you know, there are many kids, you know, especially Asian kids my age, you know, that grew up, you know, going to school embarrassed of the food that the mom and dad packed them. You know, like, I was that kid who would always hide it. And every time I opened my lunch bag, like, everyone's like, what's that funny smell? And like, you're eating weird stuff. Like, why are you eating like that? Where's your sandwich? You know, why don't you have a snack pack? You know, stuff like that. And I remember I was always very embarrassed. And I come home and I'd be in tears. I'm like, mom, don't ever, pack my lunch again. And for my mother, it was her way of loving me. But for me, it was just denying her this love. And like today, I still feel ashamed about it. But, you know, the funny thing is the kids who made fun of me when we were in, you know, elementary school, these are the same hipster kids today that are all like, hey, you ever heard of fish sauce? You know? So it's like, what the heck, bro? You know, when we were
What's kids, up, bro?
You made fun of me. But now, yeah, like, but now you're all like, hey, man, let me tell you, like, this cool thing I mean. It's like, what? Shut up.
I wonder if it's changed. Has it changed with the kids who are in school now with food's popularity?
Kids are just mean, regardless of what generation they're. They're just mean. Like, you know, like I could, like, even like now, like, kids are bullying other kids about stupid things that you're like, dude, trust me, in like 10 years, none of this stuff's gonna matter.
In 10 years, they're gonna want fish sauce. Trust me on this one.
Yeah. Like, I want to tell some of these younger kids where it's like, hey, you see all this stuff they're making fun of you? Like, I know it hurts right now, but when you're older, trust me, all those kids that made fun of you, this is gonna be the quote-unquote trend.
I actually want to dip a little bit into what I see as your larger mission of spreading this acceptance, of spreading this awareness, with your show for Twin Cities PBS called Relish, because the show really does highlight other ethnic communities or minority communities, including your mom, which is super awesome.
You
do this full circle thing, but you're shining a spotlight on other people in the Twin Cities who are making food that tells their personal story, represents their culture and things like that. How did the show come about? Why is it important for you to use your status to shine a spotlight on other cultures' foods?
Yeah, so Amy and Brittany are the producers of the show. And so they approached me and said, hey, we'd like to do the show for PBS with you. It's going to be a web show. You know, we kind of just want to do one. You know, I think at first the idea was just to do one and see where it goes on from there. So literally, we had the first initial meeting. Awesome, great. You know, this past spring we had it. It was awesome. You know, then we sat down again, like, in the beginning of summer, this, you know, past summer. And they're like, actually, we have a better idea. We want to do shoot six shows, you know, six, like, webisodes. And I'm like, oh, that's great. And he goes, and we want you to be the host. And I'm like, whoa, hold on. You know, like, I was a little nervous. I'm like, wait, seriously? Like, all of this? She's like, yeah. Like, we want you to be the host. And I'm like, okay. And they're like, we want to feature and highlight different chefs who, who, you know, have, you know, different cooking styles or from ethnically different. But then we also want to, like, not cook in their restaurant, but we actually want to go into their homes. And I'm like, well, that's actually a really great idea. And then I just got really excited. And then we just start sharing names with each other of chefs that we knew. They you know. So unbeknownst to me, I never knew how they got my name or whatever. It was actually, they reached out to a bunch of the food writers. I didn't know this until we were actually interviewed about it. And they said, yeah, we reached out to a bunch of these food writers around town, and they kept throwing your name out over and over. And they're like, hey, I bet you this would be really, you know, I bet you you'd be really good to host. And so, yeah, it kind of started from there. And then, you know, a few of the chefs that we got to do for season one, they were friends of mine. So it was really cool just to be able to like get a day off and just hang out with them and learn about more about their lives, you know, cause like as cooks and chefs, we don't really see each other as much, you know.
Sure.
It's not like an event or some kind of thing that we're doing. So it was so cool. I was so excited, to hang out with some of them. And the first person, that we did it with was my mom. So it was kind of weird. Like I had to ask her all these questions that like, I kind of knew the answer to. So I had to act like surprised, like, oh, really? You know,
fish like, sauce. You don't say, mom. No,
I'd be like, on camera for the record, who's your favorite son?
Yeah, just so everyone knows. And where can people watch this if they want to see it?
Yeah, definitely. TPTOriginals.org /relish.
Amazing.
So, or, you know, you can go to, yeah, TPTOriginals.org and then you'll find it in there. And then next week we're finishing season two. And so I'm really excited about that. So after season one was done, thank you, man. Sizzle Reel sent it to the higher ups, you know, and at PBS, and they were like, hey, we're good to go. Here's some more funding, do season two. And it's super fun. And the producers, Amy and Brittany, are to be given full credit to. They're incredible for trusting and believing in me, who, you know, I'm just kind of this kid who goofs around on camera. And a lot of the stuff that they get on camera is just kind of me being me, I guess. Like some shots that they had, some of the best shots on camera is literally things that I didn't think the camera was on, or just kind of goofing around. And so, yeah, it was awesome.
Awesome. So before we run out of time, I want to go back to the Kickstarter and talk a little bit about it. Why is it important for you to raise the money this way, to have the restaurant be crowdfunded, versus given your status and given that people are trying to court you to take essentially private equity or, you know, something that is a little bit, you know, more traditional?
Yeah, I think that the Hmong people have always been about community. You know, the one thing that makes the Hmong people so tight together is and this is what my mom told me, is the fact that there was so much pain and hurt and struggle that our community became tighter, you know, because that's all we had was each other. And at the end, all you have is each other, there's that sense of just being knit tight together. And the other thing about the Hmong community too, is it's about reaching out to the community around you and asking for help, you know? And so for us, I think that if we wanted to, we could just do this privately, do it the way most quote unquote restaurant would do. But our big thing is like getting that message out to say, hey, like we're doing something, but we can't do this without your help, without banding together. Because the moment we band together, like I said, like what my father used to teach me, you know, when you say this is mine, we have less. But when you say this is ours, we have more. This restaurant, yes, it is about the legacy of my mom and dad. Yes, this is from our chefs and our cooks. Yes, but this is still our restaurant, all of us, you know. That the ones who, you know, who put some funding into this, the ones who put some donation from people from $10 to $1,000, like they can still say like, hey, like I'm a part of that. You know, that this is something that we will say thank you, like that the community has built together. And for us, that's really important, you know, because if we're trying to create a restaurant that says, hey, gather together, let's eat together, you know, let's dine together, let's come together and have this commonality in food, like we want to start it from the core, from the base. And it's the, you know, and I'll be very honest, it's the funding, you know. And being like, hey, like you get to be a part of this.
Amazing. Well, Eith, congratulations. Good luck. We'll be donating our way. And if other people want to donate, how would they find the Kickstarter? What's the best way to go or find you online, all the social goodness?
Yeah, we our website, vnimn.com, you know.
V-I-N-A-I.
Yep, MN, like from Minnesota, .com. You can find us on our Facebook page, all social media outlet. We'll be just blasting it out. And so everyone come on there. There's a cool video in there too that kind of, you know, it's like a 5-minute video that kind of shows the vision, mission, values, and goals of what we're doing. So, yeah.
Amazing. Well, listen, congratulations. I hope to see you soon. Congrats on the show and everything. We have a song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Ladies and gentlemen, Snacky Tunes, heritageradionetwork.com. We're Finger on the Pulse. That was just DJ Never Forget.
Who was that last song?
That was
really good.
It's a song called Surprise Hotel by a band called Fool's Gold, which is a little unfortunate. But they're really good. The record is coming out on I Am Sound in the fall. And before that was Florence and the Machines, Dog Days Are Over, which is also on I Am Sound. Just two really good. Florence and the Machine record is really, really good.
I didn't know Florence and the Machine was on I Am Sound.
They're going to. I don't think it's out yet. Those are unreleased tracks.
Booyah!
Illegal.
Another FOTP exclusive. Anyway, so big shout out to our sponsor, TechServe, who keeps our computers from dying, and to Jack Inslee and RecTech, our producer and engineer, respectively. Big shout out to Maddie, Luke, and Eric holding down the Dinner with the Band fort.
Maddie was actually the listener who sent me in that Julia Childs link, but I didn't feel like dropping his name. Like, my friend Matthew Reynolds just sent me this thing. Wait, sorry, caller.
I have a correction. You called it Julia and Julie.
Is it the
You're
other
dead
one?
Wrong. You're dead wrong with that one. It's Julie and Julia.
Oh,
I've seen the poster.
Whoa!
Burn.
Hey, Julie Child, right?
Julie Child.
Anyway,
Julie Child and
so in the
Julia,
studio,
whatever.
So in the studio.
You got, hold on a second, you guys ready? Because this is live.
Oh.
Oh, okay. In the studio today, we have Tijuana, our good friends, Wayne, Chris, and Conrad. From left to right, even though you can't really tell.
Hi, Mom.
Oh, nice. It's Wayne's mom. Hey.
Hey,
Mom.
Hey, Wayne's mom.
Hey, Ms. Longwell. So, these are three of our best friends, and they also happen to be in this awesome band, which is very fortunate because your first show on that rooftop I saw, I was like, oh, I don't know about this, guys. I'm going to see a lot of these shows.
Interesting. Gloves just came off.
Yeah, the gloves came off. But then you guys played at Santos for your second show, and it was amazing. So...
They're back on.
Gloves are back on.
Yeah.
And
wait.
What's this? Where's this out? By the way, by the end of the show, we will find out which one of you is the father of Greg.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also has the not
who's
the father
Greg? Answer. Yeah. You mean never forget?
Yeah, never forget. Delmont.
Do we go you never Delmont's forget brother? Or never?
Yeah, Delmont. So anyway, so we just want to say coming up also next week, August 19th at the Hope Lounge. It's our last summer barbecue blowout series with DJs from the Dap Kings. And they're wonderful chefs of Prime Meats. And Chris and I were talking about Prime Meats.
If anything is a ringing endorsement for Prime Meats, it's that I have a friend that works there. And he told me that when they opened, Jay-Z rode his bike there. So if that means anything, if Jay-Z will get on a bicycle and ride.
That's almost like
we also,
on making the band
that,
like, when they walk to get cheesecake. It's almost the same.
2 or 3 weeks ago, I heard a rumor that Jay-Z and Beyonce were shooting pool and playing Big Buck Hunter at East River Bar.
Probably.
Yeah.
Listen, they'll do anything.
Yeah.
They're at East River Bar.
They were probably Crazy in Love and got lost.
Yeah, is that,
okay.
Crazy in Love Part 2? Anyway, so beyond just being awesome dudes all wearing black t-shirts.
Beyonce and Jay-Z?
Again, hold on a second. Air conditioner. You got like one responsibility and it's just...
You're
awful.
One of the things that we love to do together is go and eat wings at, you know, many, many places.
Like Croxley's Monday night.
Croxley's Monday, that's tonight.
Oh man, what if we got Croxley's a sponsor? That'd be awesome. Shoot.
Coming at you live from Croxley Ales. 10 wings every Monday.
But most of the events are like, all right, one more.
But I think we've all had many winter days watching some HBO and eating Buffalo Cantina.
Yes.
Don't
love it.
Ever get the suicidal.
Conrad, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. Well, I like things really hot, like really, really hot. And I got the flavors are like hot, hotter, and then suicidal, you know? So I got like the hotter the first time I ever got them. And I was like, these are not hot enough. So I got the suicidal. And, like, I took a bite of one of them. And I literally, like, sneezed, coughed, cried, and got the hiccups all at the same time.
And then he lost his voice.
Yeah,
and then I lost my voice.
This was a year ago. It still hasn't come back. Yeah. I think that probably the only...
Hold on a second. My favorite P.S. on that story is that you were so broke that you washed off the sauce.
The leaks did that. Oh. The leaks washed off the sauce and refried.
The leaks.
queen of the barbecues, fryer of chicken wings.
I came home from work and she was like refrying them up in the, on the stove.
Oh, and you absolutely did not eat them, right?
I absolutely ate them.
So let's have him play a song.
Yeah. Anyway, so Tijuana put out a really awesome EP earlier this year.
I believe it was called Demo.
It was called Memorex CDR.
I'm gonna take that one around the room.
Can you do a crowd cheering for me?
Do a crowd boo.
So anyway, so talk to us about Tijuana. Yeah.
Someone else.
It's a band we're in.
All right. Let's.
Didn't know.
That's a project we've been working on since about early last winter, and you know, pushed really hard and played some really awesome shows with a lot of really cool bands, and
a lot of bassists kept doing stuff.
How many bassists did you have? Bassies?
Have you ever 69. Seen Spinal Tap?
Three, sort of.
And now you're bassless.
They all died.
All car wrecks, all separate.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, so the EP came out to a lot of rave reviews. And,
from who exactly are you referring to?
We are huge fans.
It was the week before the DeLorean EP took over our Tijuana EP.
DeLorean EP.
Yeah. Anyway,
if you go back and listen to the show, it was a joke.
I remember. Okay.
It's called
the
a reference
archive, so you can go back and
these follow reference jokes.
Where we're going, so we don't need references.
So let's do this. Play a song.
What is
the song? What's it about? It's about girls.
This is a song. This one's different from the rest. About girls. It's called. Which one are we gonna play?
Tune in.
Yeah.
Let's go.
It's on the EP.
Wayne, lead vocals.
Hello.
Chris, percussion.
What if I?
Sorry for that, everybody.
Hey.
I don't think. Anyway, let's start over. And Conrad, you're just handsome.
He's not just handsome.
Conrad,
he's in the
handsome.
Cure also.
So this is snack. This is Snacky Tunes with Finger on the Post, and this is Tijuana live in studio.
Okay. Thank you.
The
boo.
Oh, it's a cheer.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Damn it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tijuana on Snacky Tunes coming at you live, heritageradionetworks.com, every Monday, Monday 2 p.m. to 3 p.m.
You got that?
Yeah, I got that. Listen, guys, that was awesome. A little bit different than the version that's on the demo EP.
Yeah, that. Well, that was how I originally wrote it when I...
Remember? Also, we're on a lot of drugs right now, so we couldn't help it.
Hi, Mom.
Just kidding.
Hey, Mom. What is it? What is this, Monday?
Can you play the slide whistle now?
Boop.
That was me shooting up. Sorry, Mom. not a leak. My real mom.
So then how did that version go into the version that we all know?
Well, we worked on that song...
That one was probably one of the tougher ones to finish.
It had a lot of, it was a lot of different versions before the one that ended up being like the one we played.
Yeah. The outro became kind of the chorus.
Yeah, there were a lot of different parts. Yeah. Remember when we first were working on it, it had that like super long intro.
Yeah.
We were kind of getting
getting
like super jammy with it.
Yeah, yeah. It just didn't fit the direction of most of the other songs, but we worked on it. Found
ourselves
one
day. Yeah. Oh, really? I can't imagine how that went.
Yeah. Seriously. Dude, Wayne, this is a hit. Conrad, I know. This is a hit. Chris, shut up, Chris. You're a drummer.
I know.
A lot of screaming, dancing that we did it.
I think it changed. I think the version that we just played is just different because it's for the radio, you know?
Ooh.
So we did it for you.
So
that was kind of a think piece, what he just said.
Yeah.
I'm really smart.
Hey, speaking of the radio, how many shows have you guys done so far?
It's our fifth one.
Yeah, I want to congratulate you guys.
Oh,
it's really awesome. I've listened. Listened and I've loved.
You just the interviewee just became the interviewer.
I know, I switched the tables on you. It's weird. You want to change the
table? The table literally just turned.
Yeah, it's so bizarre. It's like, thanks.
So I think we got another song from you guys coming up.
Yep.
Right now.
Yeah.
Like literally, right. Like, why am I still talking? Why
you want to do it right now?
Do you want to do it right now?
Do it right now, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more, and then we'll play some jams. We could all sing along to My Chemical Romance like we did outside of last
game. We've done that before.
When we sing three.
I was hating my friends.
Wait, but wait, up until the Glenning fact came that I didn't have the whole album, so I was singing one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was singing. I was like singing something, and then I was like, "What?" And then when I found out there were more songs,
yeah, there were. You were missing like three
really good songs, and then my friend gave me the record, and I was. It was like getting.
You felt like Indiana Jones.
AKA me.
No, it wasn't you. It was. It wasn't you.
Oh, so we're not friends.
We're roommates.
Oh yeah, we're roommates.
What is this? Chris, you're gonna hold. By the way, you gotta hold a little bit closer.
Does this song have a name?
Hold you a little bit closer.
Everybody out.
Hold this up here.
Yeah.
Did we ever have a name for it?
Yeah, this is a new...
I think it's called Untitled, right?
It's called The Demo.
The Demo EP.
Memorex Track 5.
this is a new one that will be on our next release.
It's brand new from the winter of 07, probably. No, I'm just kidding.
What can we expect the next release? You know what? We'll save it. We'll talk about that. All right, okay. Guys, Tijuana on Snacky Tunes, heritageradionetworks.com.
Ooh, I feel your love, spirit. I wanna see some stars getting red. Please don't ever go away. Cause I wanna be by your side every day. You're not near, my heart it hurts. I feel my soul's bound to burst. Please don't ever go away.
you wrote a song about wings. Seriously though, out of all the songs that you've written, how many of them are not about girls?
Goose egg.
Goose egg.
There's I've written a lot of songs. It's hard to say. The ones that end up being that I like the most are about girls. Wonder why I like
Tijuana ones are about girls.
Yeah.
Oh, it's also weird that the one cover we ever did was that song from The Jerk, which is also about
girls
being in love
with a girl playing a trumpet.
We're just a band of, you know, lovers. No.
Hey, that was Tijuana.
Get out.
Get out of the studio. Once again, you're listening to Snacky Tunes. We're your host, Finger on the Pulse. I think Terrence is going to DJ a few songs for us, and then probably talk.
Are you? Do you have a monitor that you can like molest while he does that?
No. that is in reference to.
He used to say 500 meters away from all
Nikki,
monitors.
NikkiDigital.com. You can see Never Forget. Literally making love to a monitor on the stage yesterday.
I'm so sorry I missed it.
Yeah.
Not because I wasn't there to support you guys, because I was there to miss you.
All I know is I looked up and I thought, you know, it was just, you know, me looking at it, and there was Conrad staring at me, jaw dropped, and I said, things change in 8 months, guy. You know, there's been some cold winter nights. Anyway, so this is Banter on Hold, gents. This is Terry Diabolik on Snacky Tunes. The microphone. There we go.
Can't hear you.
That was just most chemistry. That was just you're listening
turn me
to
up in a headphone.
You're listening to Snacky Tunes, Heritage Radio Network. We are hosts. Finger on the Pulse. That was just Los Camisinos. Track Death to Los Camisinos.
Before that was Tokyo Police Club. Your English is good. And before that, Q and Not You. Let's go back to my place and put on some records. We heart our hive.
Oh, that old line.
Hey, I got
I've never used that one.
I got this new Discord record. Want to go back to my house?
Jade Tree just put out a new 7-inch. Actually, you know.
Anyway, so we got a few more minutes before Tijuana takes us out with one last song. But we were briefly talking about over the holiday when we were got free Cinemax or HBO, and they played the director's cut of
Hold on a second.
You
the,
do?
Yeah, the best.
I heard about this.
It's so good.
It's so good.
It's Conrad,
okay.
Darren, and I.
It blew our minds. Blew
and the thing is that we weren't really watching it. But we were just playing cards in the background.
It was on in the background.
And we were just like, wow, this...
Like, it crept up.
Yeah.
And we noticed, we started, I was like, wait.
I don't remember the scene.
The scene wasn't in the original.
And then we realized that we were like, oh, this is great. This is director's cut. Like, how good could it... How... Okay. What type of... That thing you do when you think of, like, director's cuts, you don't... You think, like, David Lynch... You think, you know, Steven Spielberg. Yeah. Why did I say Steven Spielberg?
I'm sorry, who?
Yeah.
Steven Soderbergh.
What is he
I think
done?
You
meant. Yeah.
Soderbergh,
yeah.
So let's set the scene. So if you all remember, Shades is drunk, coming home from the jazz club. He meets Del Paxton, and he's coming back to the hotel. He gets dropped off by Rita Hanks, Tom Hanks.
Rita, but that's not her last name.
Hey. Oh, is it Perlman?
Rita Hayworth.
Hayworth.
No, it's not. It's just a joke.
And so he runs. Okay, and he runs into Tom Hanks and Conrad. If I could let you.
Well, yeah, and Tom Hanks is
coming out there of the hotel,
and there's a man in a tuxedo
in a sports car
leaning against a red convertible, and that man happens to be Howie Long, linebacker for the Los Angeles Raiders. Like it's really him.
Oakland Raiders now.
Yeah, now, but ooh. Back then.
Also a big fan of Snacky Tunes, I hear.
Anyway,
and
so.
Roberta's.
And the Wiz.
Delicious pizza.
Nobody beats the Wiz. So Tom Hanks goes to meet Lloyd, who we later learn he's named Howie Long, that is. His boyfriend,
yeah.
Lloyd, they get into the car. And Shades comes up, and it's kind of like a cute exchange between.
He's
Tom
wasted.
Hanks and Shades.
He's like, he's like, are you going to party? Can I come with you?
And Howie Long suggests that they bring him, and Tom Hanks says, "You're so bad."
And they laugh, like, and they peel off.
Yeah. He gives them like this knowing look, and so it's like, Tom Hanks is the gay subplot from That Thing
it's
You Do,
so,
which
it
was like
so much sense is the thing.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is,
it should have been in the movie.
And the thing is, I think we watched it like 100 times. Like I think. Like,
I've watched it since as well. Like I've watched it more
why
times.
Does it make sense?
Yeah, what does it make sense? What are you trying to say?
Why does that make perfect sense? What are you trying to say about Tom Hanks?
Dude, no, because he was like.
Because he was like,
okay.
What?
Okay.
What did he look gay or something?
You know,
bam,
limp wristed.
Yeah.
He was limp wristed.
No, anyway,
easy.
It was like one of those things where it was just like, what?
Yeah, but it was amazing.
It was amazing.
Like you never think that you needed more of that movie, and now I can't imagine.
I can't imagine without it. Anyway.
It's a good
actually, stuff. You know what? That reminds me. The question you asked earlier about how did Tune In come about was from that movie.
Because
we played it slow and Chris said, speed it up.
Oh, like in the part when they said, what are we, the Wonders? And we started playing it fast. Like
Oliver said to speed it up. And then Chris said, you just that thing.
Yeah, you just that thing. You did.
And that is how we bring a show full circle. We want to thank our guests today, Tijuana. We are your hosts. What do you want to do?
Nothing.
Okay.
What do you want to do? Nothing.
We are your hosts, Finger on the Pulse. I am DJ Never Forget.
I'm Terry Diabolik. Thank you so much to Irene Wong. Again, thank you to TechServe, Jack Inslee,
Rec Tech.
Every Monday, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. live, Heritage Radio.
Next week, we go back to the dance music with JDH and Dave P of Fixed and Making Time fame. But we are going to have the show closed out by my favorite Tijuana song, which I told Wayne was the hit. And now that I'm on the radio,
I'm going to make you a star.
I'm going to make you a star.
Can I dedicate this song to a special someone?
Yes.
Delmont Bresnitz.
Delmont in Nebraska.
No one loved it. Anyway, if you want to hear this
what
again,
was
the show
DJ Snuggle, what was it?
DJ Squiggle Bandit. if you want to listen to this again, we are archive as well, along with all of our past shows. So guys,
HeritageRadioNetworks.com, all the other great shows.
Or you can go to the Tijuana MySpace as well. Tijuana, or MySpace.com/TijuanaNYC.
Question. What is MySpace?
Stop. Can we? All right.
I don't know anymore.
Guys,
it's like Twitter.
I know.
It's like Twitter,
but 10 years ago. All right. Tijuana, thank you guys. This means a lot
to
us. I'm glad that we got to get you in
here. Thank you guys.
Thank you.
So Tijuana with Oh My Marie, tune in next week.
Dude, I can't stand friends. talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.